Thanks for having me. I'd like to start off just by giving a little bit of a background as to who I am. In 2007, I chaired Ohio Linux Fest. I'm a pretty heavy community member and volunteered for OLF for many years, and was really sad last year because I couldn't make it. I was very honored to be asked to speak here today. My main focus in my life is infrastructure right now, large infrastructure, enterprise stuff. I do a lot of consulting. I'm known for mentoring people. In the past decade, I've probably altered the careers of several hundred people. I haven't kept track. I have my own open source project called Batch Login, and you can read my blog online. And of course, these notes will all be available online. It's a Google Doc. It will look a lot prettier than this, too. I'm also into Mustangs, and I have a blog set up on a current project right now that involves a racing motor and a 2000 Mustang GT. So why are we here today? I'd like to start by defining exactly what I mean by career management. I think a lot of people take a narrow focus about their career, and they think of it as a static entity, and I think that's the first mistake you make, especially given the fact that everything today changes at an enormous rate of speed, and we're all kind of along for this roller coaster ride, in IT especially, and in the age of GNU, basically, Linux is one of the dynamic things that is stirring this change. You never know what you're going to do. I've not just done infrastructure stuff. I've done development stuff. I've done some embedded programming. Different kinds of things seem to come about for us because of the technology. And I think we are on the cusp of what a lot of other people are going to be facing. Your career is changing faster today than it ever did. And I think the mistake that other people would make looking in on IT people's careers is thinking, you know, that's not for me. I'm going to be a bank teller, for example, which, of course, we all know took a heck of a disruptive hit just a few years ago, thanks to the, you know, automatic teller machines. The other thing I'm going to focus on your career is on in basically three directions. I'm going to take a strategic look at your career. I want you to think about your career in a strategic sense, in other words, a very long-term sense. And I'm also going to try and look at it from a sort of big picture. That's when I say strategic, I want you to think like from a very large overview where you're trying to go, as opposed to the day-to-day things, because there are day-to-day things that help you with your career, and there's also the big picture. And I think if you lose sight of either one, you'll make a mistake, or you'll find yourself in a quagmire. The tactical stuff I've kind of alluded to is more your day-to-day. You know, I'm trying to couch it in such a way that you don't forget that every day there are opportunities for you to help grow your career, and they may not be obvious ones, and also that there are mistakes you can make very easily in today's world where you're looking at, for example, Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn in a way that maybe isn't the actual way that thing should be helping you. So we're going to talk about that some. And also, basically about tracking your short-term accomplishments and so on. And finally, the guerrilla direction is more the things that you're not going to hear from your high school guidance counselor or people that are really supposed to be helping you manage your career. People in HR come to mind and things like that. So I'm going to start this off with a pretty common quote and see if anybody can identify that particular quote for me. Who said it? David Hadley. That's right. We have a winner. So one of the famous Ferrises, not me. I personally like this quote. It's kind of funny because, you know, it was cool in the movie, but this is the better version of that quote. Butters, you got to learn to chill. Life goes by pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while and do whatever you want, you could miss it. Who said this quote? Somebody has to know. South Park, and what's the character? Nope. Kyle. Nope. Cartman, of course. The reason that this particular quote ties into career management is I've worked many, many years with people who hated their jobs, and I mean really hated their jobs. And you sit beside these people, and they're not just, you know, in it for the short haul. They're in it to make life miserable for everybody around them. And, you know, it's horrible. And I can't help but think of Scott Peck. His definition of evil is when you stunt you stunt other people's spiritual growth to keep from growing yourself. I feel a lot of these people do a lot more damage than they realize. Your career should not suck the life out of you every morning before you go to work. It should be the kind of thing that you get up and you love to do what you do. And if you've got to ask yourself that question every day, is this something I really want to do? As a matter of fact, it seems to happen to me in the shower. Sometimes I'm thinking, is this really what I want to do? And then I'm like, yeah, it is lately, definitely it is. But there are many times in my career when I got up in the morning and I was like, crap, you know, this isn't what I want to do with my life. And I'm not going to spend my life doing that. So what I want you to do is I want you to think about, you know, do you really love what you do? Because you should. I don't think we were put on this planet to live a life of just mindless toil. If it isn't something that involves some creative aspects and something you really enjoy, it's probably something you shouldn't be doing. So is your career like a garden? Is it something you grow? Is it something you think of as a living thing? This is the first mistake people make, is a static entity. I have my career, if you go back to my guidance counselor in college, was mechanical engineer. So I should be, you know, let's go back to 19. I'm going to really date myself here, buddies. 1982, you know, I got to learn how to use pencils and draft on a drafting board because I would be drawing for the rest of my life, you know, with a T-square lead on my arms and everything. What's wrong with this picture? Well, several things. No one draws stuff with pencils anymore if they're an engineer. Almost all engineering that I've seen recently has been done in 3D CAD systems. It's certainly a lot more exciting. The technology changes. The type of work that you do changes. I got to do some engineering just before I graduated. And lo and behold, I hated it. I'm telling you, it was not for me. And I think if there's anything that differentiates me from a lot of people, it is that I just said, okay, so this isn't for me. What am I going to do? And, oh, these Unix workstations that are powering the CAD system, these are really interesting. And they were. And they, you know, pretty much showed me the way to something else. I want you to think of your career as a node on a social network. There's a selfish aspect to all human beings, no doubt about it. But if you start fostering your career, one of the things that you find is that other people want to work alongside you and that you are affecting other people. And so you end up being as dynamic a force in their career as you have been in your own, sometimes more so. I would say that there are several people that I helped launch careers in the past 5 or 6 years that are doing way better than me. And I'm like, damn, you know? Oh, well, but I'm not doing bad. Don't get me wrong. I love what I do. It should be something that helps you grow and challenges you. It shouldn't be something where you're just coming to work and you're like, yeah, I got that. And it's all the same stuff. Sometimes it's things that happen that are learning opportunities. I think of my time as a mechanical engineer as you know, there were moments where I definitely looked at the work that I did and went, man, I mean, it was just mind-numbing work, and it was stuff that I had to say, I don't want to do this anymore, you know? Was it time wasted? Not at all. It's something you're hopefully proud of. So let's talk about your resume for a minute here. How many people have a resume? Okay, everybody. How many people are on LinkedIn and their LinkedIn profile looks a lot like the resume? We've got about a third of the audience. Sorry about that, I should have turned that off. We'll get to LinkedIn later. Just wanted to know. So It's a big portion of your life, and it's something that should be fun and creative, and it should be something of your design. And I think this is a real problem with job titles and with the kind of structure that most companies have. They give you a title, you sit down at a desk, they give you some pencils or whatever, you know, here's your computer, here's your login, and from that moment forward, you're a whatever it is that they gave you. And stepping out of that may totally be impossible in that company or context, although I would urge you to not think that way. I think those things are limiting things, and that the creative aspects of being a human on this planet should be, you know, given a little more leeway. So let's talk a little bit about tactical issues. First thing that I see is a tactical blunder that people make is they don't know how to do a decent job interview. And part of the reason that they don't is because they don't go on job interviews. They basically pass up jobs. They're like, well, somebody's calling me. They want me to interview for this job, but I don't think I'm qualified, or I don't want to try. And I urge everyone to at least interview once a year. It keeps you in practice. You don't feel as uncomfortable when you do find that job that you really want to take. And it basically helps you polish your communication skills and everything else about you. So you should be, when you go to an interview, you should be very positive. You should be presentable. And you get a lot of practice being presentable. It helps. Polite. Man, I can't overemphasize how many people I've known that they go to a job interview and they're rude to the receptionist and they don't get the job and they don't know why. I was actually at a place where we were hiring a lot of people, and you wouldn't be surprised actually how many people screwed up just opening the door. You should be on time, of course. These are some really basic things, but polished, I would say. You've got to think of your presentation of yourself as a product almost. I mean, back to that thing about titles and everything. When someone's hiring someone, they oftentimes refer to the title when they're looking at the candidate and go, well, this is going to be my new whatever web engineer, you know. And so you almost have to think in these terms when you're presenting yourself and start presenting yourself as that person in that role. And I think that doesn't come easy. You have to go on some job interviews to get comfortable, to be able to say, yeah, that's what I can do, and here I am, here's how I would do it. This is really hard for a lot of people, listening to what people have to say. I would say that a good portion of my job is as what I do, which tends to be a lot of liaison work between different warring factions inside a company, just involves understand the requirements. And then if you can repeat back the requirements and get them down, it's the same thing at a job interview. So you want me to do this, you know, okay. And repeat back what they've asked for, because a lot of times people miss the most basic of things about a job because they're not listening. This is a really straightforward tip. A lot of geeks hate to dress up. I'm going to be honest with you. I hated dressing this suit this morning. I really did. It's not a hatred like, oh, I got to get root canal hatred, but it's the kind of thing where it's like, I'd rather wear a t-shirt and jeans. And maybe I should have, because I'm really out of place here. However, if I was going for a job interview, I would look just like this. And I would want to put my best foot forward. I only got one chance to make an impression, and that's it. And so if you don't dress up regularly, you don't feel comfortable in the skin. I can tell you I do feel comfortable in a suit because I wear a suit a lot. There's another reason for doing this, and that is basically that last point. When you do dress up and you show up at work and you feel good and you look good, I don't know if you remember Billy Crystal, it's better to look good than to feel good. You remind people of the thing that they bought. That person that walked in the door that they went, oh yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy. How come you can't look like this every time? Well, it costs too much money. Give them an excuse, but you can do it once a month and you can show them that's who you had. So this is probably the focus more from a free and open source kind of guy thing that I really want to drive home. You've got to start thinking about your different relationships with people. All of us, whether or not we want to think we have customers. Customers I define as the people paying cash for your service. Now, you may never see these people, okay? But every one of us, if we're in IT or we're working for some computer type output, there are people that are paying for a service somewhere. They're either buying a product that you have directly created or support or write code for. And I think one of the biggest things I see that people do tactically is miss the fact that someone somewhere needs what you're doing and they're paying money, and there's some business guy somewhere that's going, we're losing money. And at KeyBank, when I worked there was a particular application, they would actually give us a dollar figure for every minute that went by. And it wasn't like 10 bucks. It was like 90,000 bucks, okay? One of their online banking applications, when it went south, was some serious money. And I think the reason that I have to drive this home is because if you lose sight of the fact that there are customers, you forget that what you're doing has some tangible value, and you also don't know what your value is to your employer. Also, you have services that you provide, and sometimes you interface with organizations. For example, I can think of two or three organizations that I'm tangentially having to interface with all the time in my current role, and neither of them are part of the overall solution, but I have to interface with the people that provide the operating system and the monitoring and all these other pieces of software. These are all service providers to me, and I make connections with these people naturally, and so they stay in my LinkedIn profile and my network. And of course, all the people around you. Finally, I put recruiters in their own little spot. I've been accused of being a recruiter before, and it's a fair accusation. I've drugged people along with me, and also had people call me and say, I'm looking for a guy like this, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that guy. And I can look at Dennis here, and there's many times we've traded, hey, we got this guy, if he doesn't fit here. You've got to think about these people as doors to your next opportunity, because oftentimes they come knocking with something really interesting. And maybe today it isn't the thing you're after, but tomorrow it will be. And maybe you don't have the qualifications they're looking for, but you know the guy that fits. Spend a little bit of time getting to know these people and giving them some leads, and they'll come back and knock at your door again and again. And then one of those times probably be something that you want to do. Once you do land the job, manage your entrance. I'm going to start high here. How many people have been at their current job 10 years? 8 years? 7 years? 6 years? 5 years? 4? 3? 2? That's wild. It's a lot broader distribution. I suspect if we had younger people in the audience, maybe, it would be different. But the thing that happens to geeks especially, you get into a particular organization and everyone knows you and knows your capabilities. And then you find that moment when you're like, I'm going to go do this. And I'm going to tell you, as somebody that's done that a few times, that the earlier the better that you set up your communication lines with your boss and your coworkers and figure out what they're expecting of you and what you can do for them, the better off you're going to be. A big mistake of a career person walking into a company or a new situation is not to realize that people don't know you from Adam. And there's almost like a lead dog kind of growling match that goes on early for most large IT organizations. Do your best to manage that entrance, because that's a place where you can blow it. The earlier the better that people figure out that, hey, you do have some value, and the way that you present that value is extremely important, that you do it in such a way that's disarming. You don't want to seem like a blowhard. Let's just put it that way. Manage your capabilities. Make sure everybody knows what you can and can't do and that you're willing to learn new things. develop a plan with your new boss as early as possible. So what I'm saying here is sit down with him and say, what did you need me to solve? And get it in writing. Make priorities. This is all stuff people hate to do as IT people from my experience, but your career is at stake here. You're trying to deliver. And some of this stuff applies to your current job. If you're having trouble in your current job and things are floundering and you're like, how come nobody listens to me? How come nothing's working the way that it should? You know, other people are getting to do so that you would like to do. A lot of times it's because you simply haven't had a dialogue with your boss and sat down and said, what is your number one priority? What's your number one thing? And you'd be surprised sometimes how big and misaligned that is. I've seen people totally miss, like, what's the most important thing we're all trying to do here? When I say over-communicate, I mean, you know, figure out the appropriate amount of communication and make sure that you constantly make everyone know where you're at with whatever is going on. So when I say here, tend to your free open source contacts weekly. Since we're in a Linux community, the kind of technology we deal with isn't really that easy to find people to work in. I mean, especially large enterprise type deployments and the technology portfolios being as broad as they are, I can't emphasize enough that you have to, these kinds of events are great once a year, but you should find ways to connect with people as often as possible. Like, I can't say every day, but, you know, just keep them in mind at least and talk to them as much as possible. I see people lose track of their community, and then it's a basic problem. All right, so I want to talk to you very briefly about email. Email, probably the biggest thing I see that can hurt you in your career is if you become somebody rude in your email, or you are too short, or your emails are too long, or they're targeting everybody on the mailing list at once. There's a multitude of things about email that are extremely zen, and one of them is all emails should be targeting one person. Start with a summary at the top. Not everybody has time to read 15 pages of email. This is a really basic piece of communication. If it's bad news, it should say something like, I need to call you, and that's it. Don't communicate bad news via email if at all possible. Don't be rude by email ever. All these things really, they'll lead back to one thing, and that is email is potentially a permanent record. If I get really mad at Dave here, and I walk over to his desk, this is an actual example I used for a coworker, by the way, one time, and I grabbed Dave by the lapels and I screamed in his face, Dave! Dave can forget that. But if I type it up in an email, he can print that email and look at it 10 years later and still say, Paul was a real jerk that day. You know, it's permanent. And if you can think of email that way as how permanent it is, because potentially these things get shared, these really bad emails, you can think of something like that as worse. Facebook, I don't know how many people I know that post the most crazy stuff on Facebook. It's like, don't post things that you would not want an employer to see, because you think the NSA is bad about gathering data on you. I bet you that most employers have access to a database that would make our hair curl. Well, straighten if you have it curled already. This is a really obvious thing to me, but no coworkers on Facebook. You want to share personal information the way that you used to share it, and share as little as possible, because you don't know who's going to look at it, where it's going to go. So don't put your coworkers on Facebook. Don't be controversial on Facebook if you can help it. If you need to be controversial and you really need to be a troll, set up another Facebook account and be a troll there, and don't let anyone know that that's you. The opposite on LinkedIn. How many people are on LinkedIn? Everyone, thank goodness. Well, I use, just from a career perspective, it is something useful. Try not to put your friends on LinkedIn unless they're coworkers. for the same reason you don't put your coworkers on Facebook. You don't know what your friends are going to do that, you know, I was out drinking beer last night, posted that to LinkedIn. I don't know, that could happen, but it's not really why I say this. I try and make a dividing line between the two for one really obvious reason, which is you want to have your LinkedIn profile point to your professional life as cleanly as possible. How many people here know the difference? Well, does anybody here remember Alta Vista? You know, before Google, there was a time before Google. Does somebody want to volunteer? What's the big difference between Google and Alta Vista? Or any of the other crappy search engines that were around before Google? That's how does it rank the pages?
According to the advertising pain, you could essentially buy your ranking.
Not true. Nope. Yes. Google was the first search engine to rank context over content. If you were searching for, say, Ford Ranger on Alta Vista, it would go out to all the pages that had the word Ford Ranger, and it would try and figure out which one was the most important one. It was often wrong. Thousands of pages later, you'd find Ford's website. Not that it was hard to find, still. You search on Google, and what Google's algorithm did is said, how many pages that have the word Ford Ranger are pointing here? Well, that must be what you're looking for. Now, I bring this up because your resume is to Alta Vista or some other old search engine what LinkedIn is to Google. When I search for someone on LinkedIn, I don't just get content from a resume. I get to see who they know, how social they are. There's a million things that have put them in context, in a surrounding, that make it kind of more obvious to me who this person is. And for that reason, what's happened in the past probably 5 years, it kind of pivoted pretty quickly, actually, is most really hardcore search people are using LinkedIn. If you're getting foreign accent phone calls that are text searches on your old resume, which I get probably 3 a week, you know, those people are not using LinkedIn. They're using some database of resumes. Oh, this guy has Linux on his resume. He's the right guy for this Linux administrator position. And I'm just like, no, I'm not. But I'm polite to these people. It's just, all I'm trying to point out to you is your LinkedIn profile has supplanted your resume. And I would rank it in order of relevance higher. And I don't think a lot of people see that. You should keep it, for that reason, updated. Every time you update your LinkedIn profile, it's like potentially bumping you up in the search results for your profile. I try to do mine maybe twice a year because my phone will ring the moment I do. Like within a day or two, I'll be getting phone calls. So it's the equivalent of when you used to post your resume on Monster and Dice and it would sort of update things and you would get like phone calls. Now just LinkedIn, update your profile, and boom. Twitter's the same story as email. It's a permanent record. Don't be tweeting stuff that's career damaging. We used to have a phrase at KeyBank, CLM, career limiting move. just don't be controversial is my only advice. I mean, I see people posting all kinds of crazy stuff to their Twitter feeds, and it's stuff like what they're eating for breakfast and all that. I mean, really, I don't know that that's going to help you get a job. The kind of stuff I post on Twitter is stuff that's relevant to what I do, who I am. Runtime conditions. Think of your job as a program, and it needs a certain runtime environment. You know, am I getting enough coffee, money, job satisfaction? My coworkers are fun to work with. It's not a two-hour commute, you know, these kind of things. So when I say a valid social contract, that can be violated in many ways. I know somebody recently that quit their job because when they had started the job, they were assured that they would never have to work on weekends, and suddenly a new manager came along and said, no, everybody works weekends. And they broke the social contract with that person. This goes on. And it's a really common thing that you find it creeping on you, you know, put you on call maybe when you didn't used to be on call. Things just start to happen. And depending on whether or not you're cool with that, can make all the difference in the world. It should be something that's definitely helping you grow. I mean, if you're stagnant, if you've been doing the same thing, and it isn't something you enjoy and it's helping you grow in ways that you want to grow, probably something to consider. It should be fun and challenging at the same time. So challenging can mean like climbing Mount Everest. That's challenging, you know, or it can mean something like, you know, writing some new programming code in a new language that you've never tried before. If it's like that, it's something you probably want to keep. And if you're constantly doing stuff that you just find to be mind-numbingly horrible, you may just say it's not for you. It should be something you're very proud of, in my opinion. It should be helping you grow and challenge you. It should help you connect with fun people. So the bottom line is it meeting your expectations? So when I say verbal expectations, we're all given tasks at work verbally, or a lot of us are. If you're remote, it's probably all via email. But I've seen situations where you're given a command and you know that it's, you know, not the right thing for you. When you start getting into unwritten ethical expectations, they are things where maybe the business line of the company doesn't match up with what you would expect. And where I'm going with this is possibly some of that that belongs in the next series of slides, but I'm going to bring it up here, which is, you know, you'll larger organizations sometimes fall prey to a disease where they say one thing, but they're doing something else. They're like, you know, the most important thing is your family, but you've got to work 60 hours a week and be on call the other time. And we want you here on the holidays and on and on and on. The most important thing isn't your family, if that's the case. The most important thing is that you're on call and that you're working 60 hours a week and you're not getting compensated. It can get worse, though. The corporate motto oftentimes is some glib statement, and then when you dig into it, everything else is going on. Those situations can harm you, and I don't mean just mean your career. I mean, it can harm your health. Don't put up with it. That's all I'm saying. So let's talk a little bit about being a nice guy. I was told as a kid, nice guys finish last. And I consider myself, by the way, a nice guy. I work with people. I say this is what I'm going to do, and I do my best to make sure that happens. And I'm polite and diplomatic to a fault, almost. It's really, really important. Where I'm going with this is, in a small organization, you can afford to be a jerk. But in a larger organization, as you start working with larger and larger bodies of people and more moving pieces and bigger expertise, you can no longer afford that in your career. Nice guys, in my opinion, do not finish last. They just simply end up doing things like infrastructure, you know. Because I can't emphasize how many times my diplomacy, my middle childness, has helped me through situations that were deemed impossible by some people. In the open source world, definitely that kind of stuff is the kind of stuff that makes you be able to be on a mailing list. How many people here have read like Linus Torvalds' diatribes where he just goes off on someone? You know what I'm talking about? He can get away with that because he pretty much wrote the kernel from the beginning, and it's his thing. If you look at the rest of his emails, though, they're pretty diplomatic. And I've met the guy in person, and both of his parents are diplomats. He's just this terrific person. I think what he's doing in those contexts is more of a top dog kind of thing. But I think what he also is providing you is the best example of what not to do at work, because you don't own the kernel for wherever you're working. You know what I'm saying? And so you've just got to learn to be nice to people, because I can tell you that as an IT person, you're not working for, you know, 1 or 2 years in the field. If you're as long-term as the people I see in this room, that the nicer you are to people, the longer you're going to last. So this is back to the LinkedIn thing, but from the perspective of relationships of people, your reputation and how well you get along with people does travel with you from job to job. And you want to basically keep that in mind, that a Google search away is how close you are to the internet and your history. This never work for a tyrant thing. Definitely, I think part of our bane as IT people these days is that a new boss comes in who does not understand the technology, and if you think he's going to be there a long time, a great time to head out the door. I'm sorry, or actually, you want to start with seeing what else is available in the company, but great time to figure, maybe I don't need to do this, because it's a real problem, and I can't emphasize enough, don't work for people that don't fit that nice guy. What do you want to call it? They can't wear that hat. I mean, literally, this is a real problem, and it's something that I see as a marker for me, at least, that I'm not going to work there, or at least in that particular role. That's more of what I was saying earlier. So nice companies too. The culture of a company sometimes gets this pall over it, and it becomes very hard to work there. And don't be stuck in a company that's got that attitude. I've seen it almost like a Darwinian type culture before that's extremely destructive. Nice companies attract talented people for a really long time and they keep them. The opposite definitely is true. I've seen people leave companies like that at an ungodly rate of speed, and it can leave the IT situation in a really bad shape. So going back to your growth expectations and the job you're in, you should have, by the time you know you've been at a place for a year or so, have clarified exactly what your needs are to your boss or the person you report to. If you haven't done that, that's your fault. On your way in the door is the time to start figuring out what your needs are and how they are aligned with the company. If you're not growing and you haven't clarified that you need to grow this much and you haven't had that discussion with your boss, go back and have that discussion. You'll be surprised what comes out of it. It's a great time to ask for feedback from that person and say, you know, what am I doing wrong? How come I'm stagnant? Maybe there's just nowhere for you to go. I've been there before. Actually, I'll take a moment here and tell a funny story. So I was working for an organization that had job grades that were like numbers like 82, 83, 84, 85. And 85 was like a step above my manager. And I had reached a particular job grade, and the only way to get to 85 from where I sat was to get promoted somehow, but they never promoted technical people to 85. They were always managers. But there's always exceptions, right? So guess what? I asked around and somebody said, there's 4 technical people that are 85s in the company. And I had a particular project manager that really liked working with me. And she said, she could see, I was like, you know, this is really stagnant and I'm not going to get promoted. What's going on? I'd saved the company just in the prior 6 months, something like $2.5 million. So there's some incentive for me to say, let's capitalize on what I've done. So this person said, I'll get you a lunch interview with one of these guys that's at an 85. So I go to lunch with this guy and we start talking and I'm like, you know, how did you get promoted to level 85? And with a straight face, he just looks at me and says, I quit. And I'm like, you quit? He's like, yeah, I quit. And I came back as an 85. I told him when I came back in the door, they came back to me and said they wanted me back in. And that's how I got my 85. And this project manager had the best of intentions, but what she really did is open my eyes. Like, I wasn't going to get promoted to level 85. And this was in a company with 20,000 employees, 4 technical people at level 85. Now, they can tell you all they want, that they can grow your career without boundaries as a technical person or whatever, but that's crap. You know, the data is telling me something else. It's like when you're flying on instruments and you can see the mountain in front of you, but the data says, we're going to crash. You know, don't fly on instruments, or actually in this case, you do fly on instruments, and don't trust your eyes. You have to take these moments in your career and say, am I going to get what I want from this particular job? I need to step back here too as well. Sometimes you're in a job you really love, working with people you really like, with a boss that's terrific, and there's some need that's not being met. Maybe you needed to grow and you can't grow in this particular job, and it is extremely frustrating. And you have to weigh some of these things. But if your number one priority in your career was to reach a certain level of growth, and the company is never going to put you in that spot, good time to reevaluate whether or not you need to be there. And it doesn't mean that there's a 4-alarm fire. You've got time to plan. You're doing really good probably at what you do. Don't panic is, I guess, what I would say in that case. Anyways, that was an interesting moment because I had pretty good evaluations and everything, and it was funny. So, yes, hit it. That's funny. Yes, I got what I wanted with one job hop, actually. And it was fun, and I stayed there about 2.5 years and talked to everybody. Actually, I stole people from that job at the new job. It was probably not the most polite thing to do, but they were frustrated just like I was. But what I do now is really fun, and I wouldn't have that without having done what I did. So I can't emphasize enough, like, don't become complacent and just say, well, this is the way things are. Think about your job and how many hours a day you spend at it. You're spending more time than you are with your wife and kids oftentimes. You know, it should be something that satisfies you, that you go to work with and you love. And it shouldn't be the kind of thing, if there's something not being met, don't take it lying down. This I can't emphasize enough either. I think we're geeks and we like to look at our technology and say, everybody can see this. But I'm going to tell you, you are probably the only person who ever gets to see the glory of your work. And so you need to be able to explain why that's valuable. Okay, at this particular organization, the $2.5 million, that's not some figure I pulled out. It was actually money that was saved that some project manager said, you saved us this. And I took that and said, hey, this goes in my evaluation. Not that it did any good, but just bear in mind that you aren't going to be, there's no one else going to be going, hey, Paul saved us $2.5 million. I have to do that. That's my job. I can't count on anybody else advocating for me. If you don't know the dollar figures, find out what they are. Find some accountant who will be your friend and help you find those numbers if you can't find them. Be your own advocate. No one else is going to be your own advocate. Okay. That's all I'm trying to say. It's a slide. I hate PowerPoint, but no, I have to.
That phrase didn't seem to make sense.
Okay. It's cool. So your professional expectations, we're all familiar with money and ethical lines. I don't know so much that people think about that much, but I've had a few people call me with really bad ethical things. The last one, I think, there, work-life balance, I think, is one we write off too often. When you're young, it's really easy to work a lot of hours. As you get older, you start to realize really what's been taken from you is your life. And I can't emphasize enough that you have to have a life outside of being a geek. In 1999, I was the editor for LinuxToday.com. It was like my ultimate job. I loved it. I became that guy. I was just like, this is great. I sunk into it, and it was terrific. And then 2001 hit. And you couldn't afford to keep, journalists and technical people on staff, especially older workers, so out the door I went. I got laid off immediately. And it was like somebody had killed me. I'm not kidding you. I woke up just in horrible depression. And if it wasn't been for my wife who pulled me aside and said, basically, you know, this isn't who you are. You've made it who you are, but it isn't who you are. You're a father. You're my husband. You got all this talent. I already had another job. What the heck was I upset about? And I was upset because I had sunk so much into my job. A friend of mine had put it to me this way. They said, when you are what you do, then you aren't when you don't. What she was saying to me was, if you put that much stock in your person of what you do, then you can't afford to leave it because you'll be hurt when you quit. So all I'm saying to you is don't let that happen to you. You've got to have hobbies. You've got to have something outside of this. You're obviously somewhat social geeks. You're here. So an example. And when that ethical line does get crossed and things are misaligned in your company, don't hold anything back. Don't be afraid to tell them either. I have had a couple of exit interviews that were quite informative for someone. So, anyways, the company says this, your family's most important thing to us, you know. I'm having a hard time. I've got four of them in my mind that I would love to shout out, but there are companies that, you know, I don't want to call out. They're decent people. These corporate mottos that you see are oftentimes designed by committee and to mask, you know, what's really going on in a company. And you'll be working somewhere, I guarantee you, sometime in your career, and you'll be like, well, they keep saying this, but they keep doing that. You know, I don't care what they say. I'm looking at the metrics again, you know. Yes? I love Ford products, but yeah. Right, exactly. Exactly. It's not like they're going to be like, yeah, it's number five now because trucks are the most important thing on the planet, you know? I mean, Martin is number one.
At one point, I worked for a company who made their money selling software.
Yes.
This was actually a turnkey system that was selling software, but at the same time, they would not be legal for a PK zip license to use that to distribute their product.
Oh, wow.
Which was a whole whopping $500 for the site license.
So they crossed an ethical line there for sure. Yeah.
All of our customers had to have PC Anywhere. We had to got sold in one of their systems, and yet the tech support team only had
one copy
license that was too old to communicate with those versions. So we actually had to pirate someone else's current copy just so we could do our jobs.
That's definitely crossing the line. I could tell you a couple more. How much time do I have? 10? Okay. I think I'm on track, actually, so there will be more time for it's time to leave. I'm going to tell you right now, we're all changing jobs. We're not going to end up working for the same company unless we're really, really lucky till we retire. The best time to plan for leaving is right now. And I don't mean that you really plan on walking out the door. I just mean that when you're thinking about how you're going to leave a company, you should have it in your mind like, okay, here's who I'm going to say goodbye to. Here's how I would want them to be best left. That's why I write really good documentation. I don't want to be called years later. How does this work? This is why. I mean, literally the stuff that is, you know, strategic about your job, about doing it the right way, fits in here as well. But be ready to leave mentally, because when that time comes, the last thing you want to do is have it impact your decision. Hey, I wasn't ready to leave. I can't leave this. This is the most important thing to me. No, if you're thinking about what it's like to leave, you're going to be a lot better prepared when it really is time. So on your way out the door, if you're with your coworkers, don't talk smack about the company. There'll be plenty of time for that at the beer session on your last day. I'm just kidding. Just don't talk crap about your company. This is a company that's paid your paycheck. Whether or not you think it was fair, they were paying you enough, or your boss treated you like crap, they actually provided your income, and don't be mean to them. There's no need for it. It's not going to do you any good. It's best to be remembered as a friend. Stay connected to your clients. Make sure they're in LinkedIn with you. They can get a hold of you. This can get you your next job. You never know where things are going to go. When I say be a connector to your customers, so I've had it happen where I left a company and the people who had that company service called me and said, hey, is there somebody else kind of thing? And I have on rare occasions said, yeah, go here instead of there. But usually I'm like, no, this is who you need to talk to and help them still stay connected to the same transaction they had. It's not something you really want to get engaged in. Don't take counter offers. Can't emphasize this enough. A counter offer is like where you go to leave the job and somebody says, hey, why are you leaving? And you're like, well, this other company offered me more money. And then they're like, well, we'll pay you that same amount or more. Just stay where you're at. Well, I'm going to tell you, this is a career limiting move. I've not known one exception to the rule. If you take a counteroffer at that same company, you'll always basically be remembered as the guy that held the gun to the management's head. If you say you're going to leave, leave. You can always come back if you are polite and do all the other things I'm recommending. And that's a totally different transaction if a year or two has passed and somebody says, hey, we really liked working with Joe, he's coming back, or whatever, that's different. But if you are going to go, go. Don't hint around. Don't say things like, I'd stick around for this. Don't be ungracious. That goes back to what I was saying earlier about these people paid your paycheck. Treat them with respect. And definitely don't take intellectual property. So on a day-to-day basis, you want to be thinking about things from a tactical perspective, like check LinkedIn, see who's looking at your profile. I'm just kidding. You definitely, profile stats are important because if you see your profile getting a lot of attention, it probably means something you're doing is something people are interested in. And I've found that a flurry of profile views typically mean I'm getting a phone call. Manage your capabilities and work expectations on a daily basis. So this is, back to your boss and am I doing what you want me to do? I say this to my boss at least once a month. And I'm a contractor, by the way, so my boss is two people. But I go to them and say, this is what I'm working on. Is this what you wanted me to do? And you'd be surprised. Most of the time it's yes, but every once in a while, I get like, this would be better if you did this at higher priority. Saves a whole lot of trouble with, why isn't this getting done? That's what I mean by soliciting feedback from peers and bosses. So go to your coworkers too. Tend your network, so keep growing your LinkedIn network and keep kicking your coworkers off Facebook. Basically make sure that you're doing that right and keep your strategic view of what you want to do in sight at all times. So maybe you want to be Linus Torvalds someday. You're not going to get that overnight. You're going to have to set some goal and work toward that goal. And there's a bunch of creative ways to get what you want. Like I've known people that wanted to be a particular type of programmer and said, well, they don't have that technology at my company. Well, the type of skill that they have was fairly generic, and they had those type of people at the company, got them a job as that person on the help desk or whatever it was, and then they were able eventually to move over and be a programmer. It isn't like you think where it's like, I just can't ever break through that wall. You can break the wall. You just have to start thinking about where you want to be. And if you've never really focused on how to get there, you're not going to get there. You've got to come up with some sort of strategy and attempt it. Go to things like this and ask people that are doing the kind of work you want to do, how did you get your job? This is a perfect event for that kind of thing where you're leveraging your reference network and staying connected to people. You want to be a particular type of person in a particular type of company, find someone at that company at an event like this and say, how do I get in? you're going to make a whole lot more progress that way than trying to throw resumes at them or some other kind of thing. And that's basic. Plan your career. Work your plan. And be prepared for a change. I think that last statement was wrong. Laugh as awesome as possible. Often as possible, excuse me. That's my LinkedIn profile. It'll be on the slides anyways. It's /in/Fairside. Sorry about that being knocked off the slide. Oh, yeah, that got screwed up, didn't it? Nice. Yes, that's wrong. That would probably take you some Chinese website. Anyways, any questions? Yes.
One thing that sort of surprises me is what you didn't mention, working on an open source project, participating in technical forums. Do you think those things are useless? Or?
No, I kind of alluded to that about being a community member. So not everybody can program, but some people can like help. Even use type help things. I've seen that go on where they come to an event like this and show people how to install Linux, you know, or do things at their local library to do that kind of stuff. But yes, definitely good at growing your career, but all of the things that I was talking about tactically apply to those things. Yes, sir.
You mentioned manage your interests and
be disarming. By disarming, people tend to walk into a company and be like, I know these things, and then this is the way that I do them, and then they don't find out, like, maybe they're not the be-all end-all, or maybe the company is doing it wrong, but they need to see you actually doing it before you say it. So don't be like trying to cram things down people's throats. It's a real common mistake that geeks make. Just speaking as a geek, even though I'm wearing a suit, trust me, I am a geek under the hood. Yes, sir.
What's in the bottom
right corner? My email and my LinkedIn profile are both wrong, but I will get those slides corrected and get them up on the web. So, is that what you're asking? Yeah, the slide as I did it on Google Docs was nice, and this one is not. I'm sorry. Any other questions? Guys, you've been a great audience. Thanks for staying with me.